I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Former Pennsylvania Senator Vince Fumo reported to a halfway house on Erie Avenue in North Philadelphia yesterday and then apparently went home to the mansion he owns just a few miles away near the Art Museum. He was convicted 4 years ago in July 2009 of 137 counts of conspiracy and of defrauding the Senate and two nonprofits. In his heyday, he was one of the most powerful and colorful politicians in the state, whose political universe was known as Fumo World. He still faces court hearings on money he owes the IRS, and he's embroiled in financial battles with his family. Well, today on Radio Times, the rise and fall of Vince Fumo, a cautionary tale. We have three reporters who have covered Vince Fumo, including John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. John, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Do we have him? John, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty. Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. Also with us, Craig McCoy, investigative reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's won a number of awards over the three decades of reporting, including the 2010 I.F. Stone Medal for Journalistic Independence. And Craig McCoy, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Good to be here.
And Dave Davies, rounding out our trio of guests, senior reporter here at WHYY. He's a frequent host on NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and you can follow his blog off Mike at newsworks.org. And Dave, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
And my desk is nearby. Always good to walk down the hall.
Nice to have you here. Very convenient. John Baer, let me begin with you. Is there anything left of Fumo World in Harrisburg?
No, there really isn't. And all you need for proof of that is sort of the productivity coming out of Harrisburg, especially as it relates to Philadelphia. He was, as you know, the Bigfoot in the big capital city, and it's not the same without him.
And not the same as a reporter as well?
Especially as a reporter. Everybody in journalism in the state ought to feel sorry for me, for the people that I've lost, and Vince is near the top of that pile. The legislature, as you and your guests know, is like a three-ring circus, and it's mostly acts that are not that interesting, you know, clown cars and jugglers. But Vince was the line tamer or the high wire walker. He was fun to watch, and there was always an element of danger and disaster, you know, right around the corner.
Well, Dave, is there a short version for people who are out of town, maybe from Mars, have never heard of Vince Fumo? In a couple of sentences, who is he? Who was he?
You know, the short version is he was a classic power broker. I mean, he was a state senator and a member of the leadership, but that doesn't begin to measure his reach. I mean, he had ability to raise money and establish connections and extend his tentacles throughout all kinds of agencies beyond the Senate. He understood how to accumulate and use power, and he got a lot done. I mean, he got for good and ill, and he was also a guy with real personal demons, which were very evident in his downfall, and I'm sure we'll get to some of that.
Indeed.
But a hugely influential guy.
Craig, you covered him for years. In fact, some of your reporting helped to, I guess, bring him down. What was it like to cover Vince Fumo?
It became quickly contentious, and after some initial interviews, he stopped talking to me. In my view, there's no question that he was a very effective lawmaker. It's also true that virtually everything he touched, he corrupted. And if there was a way to use his power to benefit himself, he did that, and as was amply demonstrated in this jury verdict. But the entire time he was in Harrisburg, he was also a rainmaker for a prominent Philadelphia law firm. He did no lawyering, but essentially lined up clients for him, for the firm, and they paid him $1 million a year. That seems to me to be in a gray zone, to say the least. He ran a personal bank and extracted millions of dollars from that in the golden parachute and stock gifts that business experts at the time told me was quite outrageous. So Vince was a powerful politician, but he was always looking out for Vince.
Let me go back to you, John, because I know you can't stay with us too much longer. But are you saying, for all his warts, the fact that he isn't still in the legislature has been harmful to Philadelphia?
Well, harmful in the sense that if Philadelphia had a need, Fumo had an answer or a way to get to one, whatever the cost. I mean, Craig is absolutely right, as was demonstrated at trial and in the jury verdict. He did whatever it took, and often took his own piece of the pie with him. But in the schools fight, the current schools fight, for instance, there isn't a doubt in my mind that there would have been a better deal, some other deal, some other things would have happened to get more state money into Philadelphia schools if Vince were still in power.
But do you see him, John, as sort of representing an sort of old-style political boss, that kind of person?
Yeah, no question, particularly when it came to legislative maneuvering on any issue that you choose. And there are those, you know, when you see this constant stagnation now both in Congress and in the legislature, there are those who hearken back to those days when they were very strong leaders and knew how to get things done. That at least in those days, things happened. You know, deals were cut. People wanted things. Now you're in a situation where there are so many legislators opposed to any kind of growth in government, opposed to any kind of taxes to support anything, that absolutely nothing gets done. So you can't even make a deal because there are too many people that don't want anything.
Dave, you have talked to me about the people that worked around Vince Fumo, and I guess, in a sense, their effectiveness.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ways that he built his power is that he understood that information is a form of power, and he knew the value of getting and recruiting really talented staff. You know, after he was indicted in, was it 2007 he was indicted? In 2008, I went up to Harrisburg to see, what's his influence like? A guy who's like literally facing these corruption charges. And what I found was that he was still the guy running the budget process, largely because he had the information, he had the staff, and then the kind of moxie and political skill to make a deal. And it's interesting to me, as I hear Craig and John talk about Vince, I think he's all of these things. I mean, I think he represents the contradictions that the democratic process gets us. People that are effective aren't always honest, and they're not always great people. But if you look at some of the Senate staff, and John knows these folks, these are people who, in this case, were not charged with any wrongdoing. Many of them testified honestly at trial and saw all of the things Vince was accused and convicted of, and they are to this day loyal to him. They believe that he did great things, and they did great things with him.
And John, just I'm going to give you the final word because we have to say goodbye to you. Anything you want to add to what Dave just said?
Well, Dave is right. Some of Vince's top staffers are among the most respected people in Harrisburg because of their knowledge and their skills. And they told me privately after all of this came down that he managed to keep that part of his life and existence separate. That his Philadelphia dealings with the museum, with the yachts, with the or, you know, vacuum cleaners, all of that.
Which
they were unaware of that because they were busy doing the work that he wanted to get done. So they were untouched by this. They were obviously hurt and disappointed, but many of them still continue in government and in public service and are doing good jobs.
Well, John Baer, as always, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Marty, my pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. He's political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. Craig McCoy, Dave Davies staying with us for the rest of the hour, talking about the rise and fall of Vince Fumo and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Craig, it looks like you want to add something.
Well, want to add that his power, which is certainly true, was built on a bedrock of criminality. I mean, the reason that he had such an effective staff was that he overpaid them. He lied to Senate officials about their real duties. He also billed the taxpayers for decades to build up a state-financed, publicly paid campaign apparatus that included top political advisor, a private eye who did
Howard Kane,
right? He would lend out this campaign apparatus to other politicians, mm-hmm. including Casey when he ran. And while it's true that most of the wrongdoing was out of his Philadelphia office, it by no means was limited to that. His top ranked legal staff in Harrisburg was involved in shady transactions, creating bogus nonprofits for him. He was a Pied Piper that lured many people into wrongdoing, and not just the working class guys in South Philly, but also in Harrisburg.
But are you saying that his criminal behavior sort of undoes whatever accomplishments he had?
I don't know if it's, you know, if it's that simple an equation. Mm-hmm. We need to understand that his clout and his power in large base was built on breaking the law, that he was willing to ignore the law to build political power. I don't think that's an acceptable price.
Well, and we can't do justice to the 137 counts of conspiracy and fraud and other charges that he was found guilty of. But I guess, Dave, I'm asking you to, I guess, in a nutshell, if it's possible, talk about what he was found guilty of.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, it was a 137-count indictment, and it essentially involved getting other people to pay Vince's bills. I mean, somebody long before any of this happened told me, you'll never see Vince Fumo taking cash. What he will do is get other people to pay his bills. And so he had a state Senate staffer managing the renovation of his mansion in the Fairmount area of Philadelphia. He got free trips on yachts from the nonprofit that he had associations with. He got this other nonprofit, Citizens Alliance, to buy him vans, cars, tools, vacuum cleaners, all the rest of it, a bulldozer for his farm. So, I mean, it ended up being millions of dollars worth of mostly publicly funded expenditures on his behalf. That was the gist of it. There was also obstruction of justice and some other things thrown in.
Yes, and we'll get to some of those. But John Baer had mentioned vacuum cleaners. And just, I guess, to add to the list, Craig, you know, buying turkey fryers, tiki torches, 17 vacuum cleaners. It's a curious spending spree that he went on with other people's money.
Well, the trial, you know, revealed his peculiar personality traits in many areas, and you know, he had the he tried to have the same set of Oxford shirts and khaki pants in the closets in all of his four homes. He wanted an Oreck vacuum cleaner on the floor of on every floor in every house, so that no one, I guess, had to lift the thing, carry the thing upstairs. A very odd man. I mean, from what I was told, that if you went to the basement of his, or rather his garage, at the Jersey Shore, and you opened the door, there were hundreds and hundreds of mail order items and goods that he'd purchased that he'd never opened. They would just throw them into the garage, and you know, he got his fun from the mail ordering, but never actually opening the items up.
Obsessive guy. And one of the other interesting things about Vince is that he was not the kind of typical glad-handed politician that you expect. I mean, he didn't particularly like, you know, greeting strangers. He wasn't a charismatic public speaker, although he was smart and articulate and could make his points. He really exercised his power on the inside, privately, and was very, very effective in that way. I mean, and the kind of conversations that I had with him, I always loved getting him on the phone because he would blurt things. He had a little self-control, which is why his folks generally try to avoid that.
Well, indeed. And let's take another short break, and we'll get back to our conversation with senior reporter Dave Davies at WHYY, Craig McCoy, investigative reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. We are talking about the rise and fall of former Pennsylvania Senator Vince Fumo. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. Alzheimer's is not curable, but prescription medications can sometimes help to maintain the quality of life for longer periods. Keystone Clinical Studies of Norristown is conducting a research study to test a new investigational medication for patients with a diagnosis of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. 610-277-8073. 610-277-8073 or KeystoneClinicalStudies.com. Keystone Clinical Studies supports WHYY.
Hi, I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis.
Greg and I are music critics and the hosts of Sound Opinions, the world's only rock and roll talk show. And we go back and forth about which new records are worth buying, worth burning, or deserve the trash.
It is a pummeling album, and it is a buy-in record.
Just a big, boring record. Trash.
This is such a bad record.
Wow, you're having a bad week, huh?
No, I
had. How could you
I
not enjoy this record?
Monday nights at 10 on WHYY.
This Week in This American Life.
You're not going to go drink that soda in there, are you?
Yes, I am.
No.
What
the soda,
you know,
is ancient. And the fridge is filled with roaches.
The fridge is not filled with roaches.
Why don't you take a look and see what's in here?
In his mid-30s, Josh moved back home to take care of his alcoholic mom.
Dead roaches everywhere.
Well, they're dead. They can't hurt me anymore.
This week on This American Life.
tonight at 10 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're talking about former Pennsylvania Senator Vince Fumo. He was convicted of 137 counts of conspiracy and corruption. That was 4 years ago. Served 4 years in prison. He's now back in Philadelphia, apparently reported to a halfway house in North Philadelphia, and then apparently went home to his mansion in the Fairmount section of the city. In his heyday, he was one of the most powerful politicians in the state, and we're talking about him with Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, and Craig McCoy, an investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Nobody doesn't have an opinion about Vince Fumo, it seems. I know, Dave, you want to respond to, I think, something that Craig was just saying.
Right, I was just saying, you know, I mean, Craig makes the point that a lot of Vince Fumo's power and authority was based on criminality and dishonesty, and I would never want to defend him as an actor. But I also think that a lot of what he did was use tools that politicians have and just do better at it. I'll tell you a quick story. Back in his day when he was powerful, he used to have an annual fundraiser on, I think, a birthday that he and Harry Truman shared, and he would always invite one reporter each year, and 1 year it was my turn, and I went there, and there was just this big, huge party, and I didn't know many people, but I ran into a woman who'd been in city government before, not a political person. She was a transportation expert, and I said, "What are you doing here?" And it turned out she now worked for an engineering firm that did state business with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. And so in order to make sure that they were well-received in competing for state business, her firm bought $4,000 tickets to this fundraiser. It's just the way things are done. So what Vince does, because he has influence in state contracts, he gets her money and hundreds of people like her, gets hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal campaign contributions. He uses that then to support other candidates, including a lot of judicial candidates.
Oh,
why
okay.
judges? Well, maybe you get help in court, but beyond that, many the judges in Philadelphia make appointments. They appoint the Fairmount Park Commission members. They appoint members of the Board of City Trusts, which control a lot of real estate. They appoint the members of the Board of Revision of Taxes. Vince then accumulates connections and leverage all over the place. Now, a lot of politicians do this. He understood how to do it really well and really aggressively, and then he would use those connections to make more money and build on it. And so that's a lot of what he did, and it's still done by a lot of people, but fewer people were smarter at it or worked as hard at it as he did. Now, he ended up destroying, in the end, a lot of those relationships because he would make demands that people weren't comfortable with, and as Craig says, he took things too far. But I do want to make the point that a lot of what he did was to work the machinery of politics and government in a really effective way. And there are stories of where he's did it for good causes.
Of course. I'm just curious about your response, Craig.
Well, I agree with David. And Tom Fitzgerald, our political reporter, once referred to Fumo as an octopus playing a pipe over organ because, you know, he had so many different keys to punch to implement his power. I guess where I might disagree with David and John to a degree is I guess I'm not fully buying this notion that at the end of the day the power was all that usefully employed. I mean, look at the condition of the Girard College now. And the Inquirer had an investigative project during the peak of the Fumo powers there to the effect that it was squandering its inheritance on millions of dollars of real estate investments in western Pennsylvania. And of course now the Board of City Trust is trying to dig the school out of that mess. So I have no doubt that he did contribute help the city in major ways in terms of funding and so on. But I think even his record in public policy is pretty mixed.
Well, and Dave, you actually interviewed on Radio Times a couple of years ago the prosecutors, I guess, an FBI investigator who prosecuted Vince Fumo. And apparently Robert Zausmer, who was one of the prosecutors, was able to figure out 27 times that Vince Fumo lied when he was on trial, and he did take the stand. And Craig, do you want to add to that?
I'm shocked it was only 27.
Well, I'm actually quoting you here, Dave. But
oh, really?
Anyway, yeah.
Well, one of the most significant lies, actually, Marty, came to you on your show when we haven't mentioned this, but the one nonprofit that he ended up ripping off was a South Philadelphia organization known as Citizens Alliance for Better Neighborhoods. And it was funded by $17 million given it secretly by PECO, the power company. And Fumo basically arranged for this donation in return for dropping some political opposition to PECO at the time. You brought him – when this news broke, there was a controversy about it, particularly because of the secrecy, and it smacked of extortion. And you brought Vince in here, and he said to you, I get no benefits from Citizens Alliance. And the prosecutors end up playing that tape of your interview with him during the trial as evidence of his lies because he later acknowledged he'd taken tens of thousands of dollars in gifts and other items, you know, his total, they ultimately concluded that he had ripped off that nonprofit to the tune of $1.5 million.
Well, and I have to say, I actually re-listened to some of that interview yesterday. It was 2004, so quite a few years ago. And, Craig, in many ways, I was just quoting you to Vince Fumo, since you and some other reporters at the Philadelphia Inquirer had been sort of on his tail for PECO and Verizon and a number of other deals that he was working on.
Yeah, there was a reporter there, she's moved on, named Miriam Hill, and the two of us had kind of begun to unravel the PECO story.
But what's interesting, though, and this is getting a bit into the weeds, and I'll toss this to you, Dave, and then we'll get to our callers, because in listening to that interview, he was saying to me in a very strenuous voice, you know, through this PECO deal, I got people's rates reduced, that no one else was willing to do this. I was willing to do this. You know, how can you not see the benefit of what I was trying to do for the people living in this part of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, and I guess there's a debate about in the end whether that settlement benefited consumers more than if he hadn't gotten involved or not. I know I wrote that Steve Hershey, who had spent many, many years as a community legal services attorney battling rate cases on behalf of consumers, was involved in that case and recalled to me the day that he got a call, I think it was from Christopher Craig, who was Vince Fumo's staff attorney, that said the senator is interested in this. And his experience, this consumer lawyer, was that Vince weighed in with his legal expertise and technical information, his technical staff, and political clout in ways that he believed truly benefited consumers. And in some respects, that's the kind of perfect Vince Fumo case, because then if indeed he helps consumers for years, Hershey seemed to believe he did, he then finds a way to get something for himself. And it's a lot. It's $17 million for a nonprofit, which itself did some good things in the process. But a lot of it went to Vince and his friend Ruth Arneo and others.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Dave Davies, a very familiar voice here at WHYY, senior reporter for WHYY, and also with us, Craig McCoy, investigative reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we are talking about former Pennsylvania Senator Vince Fumo. He's back in Philadelphia, having served 4 years in prison. He was convicted of 37 counts of conspiracy and of defrauding the Pennsylvania State Senate and two nonprofits for millions of dollars, and again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Richard Tom to join us on Radio Times. And Richard, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
I've been with for 25 years the former Old City Civic Association.
Oh, sure.
And we had a very interesting relationship with Vince, the Vincinator. For more than a decade, he helped support and fund our civic group's efforts down here in Old City through the infamous WHAM money, walking around money. Sure. And then when that dried up and disappeared, he managed to find other sources of funding, none of which we could ever determine were of particular nefarious nature. But on the other hand, he tended to support and in effect be in opposition to our concerns about the increasing number of liquor licenses that involve nightclub activities down here. And we've spent 20 years trying to get our arms around that issue down here, along with the police department. In the early 2000s, though, Vince did a bit of a flip. And what he suddenly, people got to him, Society Hill Civic, ourselves, Queen Village, everyone individually got to his staff, and for some reason, Vince was convinced that there was a real problem down here. And to our amazing surprise, he helped shepherd a bill through the legislature that created a conditional licensing agreement. It's called CLAs. And those CLAs allow the civic groups where a liquor license is coming into to have some say in the kinds of activities that go on in the restaurant/nightclub. And this was the conundrum of Vince Fumo. He could be, we all knew in the press about all the other activities that were going on involving him and some things that were, purported to be illegal.
Right.
And on the other hand, our civic group benefited enormously. And to my recollection, he and his staff never asked for anything back. We kept waiting for the other shoe of, okay, Vince, you're giving us this. We're getting
here. Someday we'll come to you for a favor.
Where was the other
and
shoe?
And it didn't happen.
And because I've been in meetings privately with city council people where there has been another shoe. But this is the conundrum of Vince. You couldn't read the guy.
Well, Richard, that's a great it's a great story, and it actually speaks exactly to what you were talking about, Dave Davies.
Yeah, and I'm interested to know, Richard, you've had 4 or 5 years without Vince as your state senator.
Yes.
How's it been?
Excellent. Farnese's been very good, and is in fact we understand will reintroduce legislation to provide a shield law, so that my civic and other civics in the city will not be sued out of existence. And he did that almost without prompting when he heard that we had a fold after 42 years back in May. We were sued 4 times in 5 years.
Wow.
And none of the cases ever even went to trial, but simply the defense costs wiped out our insurance coverage. But Farnese stepped up to the plate and said, yeah, half the civic groups in the city are not insured. And so his, and we all know about the Fumocrats, and they all come.
Well, you know what, Richard? I just have to jump in here only because, first of all, I appreciate the call to Radio Times because it speaks, as I said, to what Dave Davies is talking about and adds to our conversation here. So thanks, Richard, for calling in. I mean, does that surprise you what he said, Dave?
No, I mean, you hear that from folks. I mean, I will just mention the Farnese he mentioned is Larry Farnese, the current state senator of that district who won election in 2008 with Fumo's support against John Daugherty, the labor leader and arch adversary of Fumo. But,
Craig, let me talk a bit about your relationship. I guess as you were doing these investigative reports for the Philadelphia Inquirer, I got a copy of a speech that you gave 2010. You received the IF Stone Meat Award for your reporting. Some of it I can't say on the air because I would get in trouble with the FCC. But you were known in Fumo's office as McCoy the Jerk.
Yeah, that came out in a government exhibit, I guess, when all of Fumo's emails were were introduced as evidence. I mean, it was very contentious after a while. Mm-hmm. And, he was represented until he had a falling out with him by Dick Sprague, who is one of Philadelphia's most prominent lawyers. And, so I would routinely get hot letters from Dick Sprague about our coverage and so on. Yeah, they were very unhappy that we were poking around into these matters. As I mentioned, the PICO deal for $17 million was entirely secret, and neither he nor PICO would reveal it. That was his method. He was called the Prince of Darkness. That was another one of his nicknames, and with good reason.
Well, and the FBI was also poking around as well, right?
Yeah, the FBI, there were two agents, Kathy McAfee and Vicki Humphreys from the FBI. They, working with Robert Zasmer and John Peace, the two prosecutors, they pursued Fumo for 4 years. I mean, it was a really, in a way you have to feel for him because he had to stare down the barrel of that gun for an awful long time.
It was Javert and Jean Valjean for a while. I mean, just talk about dogged.
Yeah.
We've talked before about how fascinating the case was, and the audio of the trial was posted on the government's website and was downloadable for a reasonable fee, and I loaded them onto my iPod. I got to say, it's every bit as good as Breaking Bad
or
The Sopranos to me, and it is fascinating, fascinating stuff. And you're right. I mean, those two agents were so dogged and creative and persistent in building that case.
And we're talking about things like vacuum cleaners. I mean, sort of finding all the sort of details that cumulatively became the basis of this.
Yeah, they worked backwards from store receipts and sort of just climbed up and built a spreadsheet literally from scratch until they had assembled tens of thousands of dollars of purchases and free gifts that they confronted Fumo with on the stand. And after telling you, I get no benefits from him. There was a terrible moment for him in the trial where he admitted that was completely untrue, and he had to acknowledge that he had taken all these gifts.
How did he get so wealthy? Do you know, Dave? This is a man who owns houses.
He was born into wealth, right? Craig, I mean, his family owned the bank, and then he added to that in the ways that Craig mentioned. I mean, he was an attorney and used his political connections to get a great job with the Dilworth law firm and made about $1 million a year there. And yeah.
And now their family squabbles over some of this money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like serious squabbles, right?
Yeah. I mean, Craig's written a lot about that. I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, kind of Vince's personality, which we haven't talked a lot about, is so voluble and well, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, right, but he clearly has some big issues. A lot of his close relationships, both in politics, family, and personal life, have really detonated and have resulted in bad feelings and litigation, and unfortunately, I think alienated now from pretty much all three of his children.
Yeah, that's true, Craig.
Yeah, it's sad that upon his release at long last, oddly in a way, he has three kids, and he's been estranged for 10 or 15 years from one of his daughters. But when he went to prison, he was strongly supported by his other daughter and his son. And somehow, from his prison cell, he had a falling out with the other two kids, and now none of his three children are talking to him.
Wow.
And as Dave knows, all of his stalwart political allies, almost all of them, have departed from him too. I think Jim Kenney used to be his chief of staff, and he's a Philadelphia city councilman, mm-hmm. and on and on and on. I guess that's to be expected in a way, that once he lost his power, friends would drift away. But he's extremely isolated now, I would say.
Well, and Dave, you had an interesting piece in your blog, actually, sort of thinking about his future. As you said, you're not a psychiatrist, and you weren't offering advice, but you were talking about some of the other people who have had, I guess, second chances. And the question is, what should he do next?
Yeah, it is an interesting question. And, there's a long history of Philadelphia politicians who've gone to jail on corruption charges and have come back and have had successful second acts. I mean, Jimmy Tyune runs that newspaper. And a lot of them became lobbyists or political consultants and stayed in the game. They can't vote or run for state office, but they can be a member of the party. There have been convicted felons who've been ward leaders in the Democratic Party at times. Mm-hmm. And what's different what differs Vince in many ways from them is that those folks were mostly people who got into politics, at least in part because they liked people and understood relationships. And Vince tended to exercise leverage over people. Now, that's not the only thing he did, but it's just hard to imagine him having the temperament to kind of be a supplicant or to to work with people rather than to give orders. He does have a political action committee, which has some money left and some personal wealth, so he could make some. He could do some. What he really needs to do, I think, is focus on his family and rebuilding some of his relationships.
And that's Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY. Also with us, Craig McCoy, investigative reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. We are talking about the rise and the fall of former Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Fumo and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's festival presents the Richard Thompson Electric Trio, Todd Rundgren, the David Bromberg Quintet, the Mavericks, Asleep at the Wheel, the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and many more. For a weekend of concerts, crafts, kids' activities, and camping, the Philadelphia Folk Festival, August 15th through 18th on the Old Pool Farm in Upper Salford. For tickets and festival information, 800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
On the next Fresh Air, why does it cost more in America to give birth, have a colonoscopy, or have a joint replaced than it does in most developed countries? We talk with New York Times correspondent Elizabeth Rosenthal, who's spending a year investigating the high costs of health care in the U.S. The third part of her series was published this week. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
America's front line in the war on terror is not Iraq or Afghanistan.
There were maybe 300 people who were in Al-Qaeda. Now we are talking about thousands of people all over Yemen.
the problem with Yemen, and the latest on Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about former Pennsylvania Senator Vince Fumo. He reported to a halfway house yesterday in North Philadelphia, then apparently went home to his mansion, and I don't think I'm overstating it when I say a mansion just a couple of miles away in the Fairmount section of Philadelphia. He served 4 years in prison, convicted of 137 counts of conspiracy and corruption, and it should be said, in his heyday, perhaps one of the most powerful or the most powerful politician in the state of Pennsylvania. Talking with Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. You can read his off-mic blog at Newsworks, and you can also hear him subbing for Terry Gross on Fresh Air. Craig McCoy also with us, and he's an investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, won a very prestigious award for some of his coverage of the fall of Vince Fumo. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Keith from, looks like, Bryn Mawr to join us. Keith, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to ask your guests and maybe you about John Carter, who was the president of the Philadelphia Maritime Museum and is now in jail as a result of a bunch of things, but a lot of them having to do with Vince Fumo, who only did 4 years for a variety of tremendous crimes, and John, to a much lesser extent, was involved in the same kind of thing, and he's doing 15 years in a federal pen. And I'm wondering why there was such a miscarriage of justice or unequal kind of netting out of justice in these two cases.
Well, it's a great question, Keith. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Craig, can I toss that to you?
Well, Keith, this, you know, brought up one of the sore points of the entire Fumo case. There was a lot of controversy when the judge, Ronald Buckwalter, gave Fumo the 4 year or 55 original 55 month prison term. He's right. John Carter, who embezzled a lot of money from the Independent Seaport Museum and was a kind of enabler of Fumo's, got a very rough sentence of 15 years. I believe Corey Kemp, who was the caught up in the pay-for-play scandal, was given a 10-year sentence. So it was clear from, you know, from the sentencing proceeding that Judge Buckwalter did not view it as that serious a crime.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that, Dave?
Exactly. I mean, I think the prosecutors would just agree with everything the caller said. Judge Buckwalter, in handing down the original sentence, said that Fumo had done a lot of good for a lot of people. He was a very talented legislator, but he had, quote, got caught up in all the perks, which seemed a kind of weird description for the scale of the theft that the senator clearly had engaged in. The other kind of bit of context here is that I think, you know, sentences generally for public corruption cases have gotten much stiffer in the last. I mean, you know, if you go back 10 or 15 years ago to, you know, to Abscam and some other cases, dirty politicians tended to get, you know, 1 to 4 year sentences. And now they've gotten, you know, 10 years and more.
Yeah.
And Vince Fumo was the exception. Buckwalter just clearly saw it differently from everybody else. And we will just add that they talk about, you know, Javert chasing Jean Valjean. The prosecutors are not finished with Vince yet, although he may be home. There's still a hearing on restitution. They want him to pay another $800,000. We should also just quickly add, Marty, that you mentioned he's going home to his – we don't know whether he's going to be going back to the halfway house or home. But in either case, he is confined. If he is home, he is – it is home confinement. His sentence lasts until, what, February 2nd, Groundhog
that's
Day
correct.
Next year.
That's correct, yeah.
Groundhog Day. And also the IRS is still looking at him. Isn't that true, Craig?
Yeah, late last year, the IRS hit him with a $3 million tax bill, saying that basically all the illegal booty that he took from the nonprofits and from the state senate was the equivalent of taxable income, and he hadn't paid taxes on that. So, and as David mentioned, he's already paid $3.5 million in restitution for his in conviction, and there'll be a hearing probably in the next 6 weeks or so in which the prosecutors are asking to jack that up by another $800,000. So, I mean, he's got a lot of worries ahead of him, financial worries at least.
Who are his victims? I mean, if he's paying restitution, who?
He had to pay money back to the taxpayers. He had to pay money back to the Treasury of the State Senate and both of the Citizens Alliance is in line for $1.5 million. And as David mentioned, he went on Every summer he would cruise for free on luxury motor yachts owned by the Independent Seaport Museum, which was run by John Carter. That was a freebie worth about $150,000, and he has to pay them back.
Keith, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Let me just quote a couple of sentences that Fumo said, I guess, right before he was sentenced. And he said, "It's an embarrassment to stand here under these circumstances. All I can say, Your Honor, is I've done my best, given of myself the things I did wrong. I never at the time thought they were." Craig, has he ever sort of admitted what you say he is guilty of?
Not at all. I mean, he's in a resentencing procedure. The government seized all of his prolific emails from prison, and he never in any of the emails to his friends and associates accepted any responsibility or blame for what he did, and just railed against everyone but himself, including the prosecutors, the FBI, and notably the jury itself in the case.
Yeah, I think Vince's view is, look, did I get some stuff? Yeah, and it's a bargain. You got me. You got my staff. You got my clout. I did great things. A few million. It's a
Those are the perks?
It's a great deal for the taxpayers and the public. I think that's the way he sees it. You know, he led a nice lifestyle, and yeah, he had his computer shipped up to Martha's Vineyard when he vacationed, but that's what it took to keep the Vince machine working for you. And I think that's really the way he sees it.
And he's a pretty prolific emailer, right, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, there was actually testimony in the trial that he would email people who were in the next room of his house. And I think that in a way that probably gets to what David was talking about, his temperament. He's actually, I think, fundamentally a rather shy man. I think he actually even has issues with eye contact. Would you agree, David?
Yeah. No, it's there's kind of odd tics when you speak to him. Yeah.
And again, he has so many nicknames, but one was Senator R2-D2 because he was light years ahead of the rest of the Pennsylvania legislature in terms of computer technology. And even though he was the second-ranking Democratic senator, the caucus ceded to him all control over Senate technology because he knew it better.
Well, and this is also a piece of what brought him down, Dave, was he had some IT guys, I guess, that were told to cover up some of these incriminating emails.
Right. Among the obstruction of justice charges against him were that when he realized people were onto him, he wanted those computers scrubbed. And they did a pretty doggone good job of it. I mean, but unfortunately, one of the guys had kept a hard drive or a server, and then there was his son-in-law who had kept some emails of his.
And his ex-girlfriend. He did a massive scrubbing job of his emails, and indeed the prosecutors later said that's one of the reasons why they never charged him with extortion in the PICO matter, because they felt the evidence any evidence might have been wiped out. That said, his ex-girlfriend turned over his emails, his estranged son-in-law turned over emails, and even the technician who was later convicted and was the prime wiper forgot to wipe his own emails. So, I mean, the feds ended up assembling thousands of them.
Do you think of Ed Rendell as part of Fumo World, Craig?
Absolutely. I mean, they were at least allies. I think maybe Ed was a little uncomfortable around Vince and Vince's bluntness, but there's no question that they worked in concert a lot.
Ed is a pragmatist, and when he became mayor, there was Vince, who had not supported him, and Ed's chief of staff, David L. Cohen, realized that Vince was a guy with the power and that could help him get things done. And what's interesting there is that not only did they get a lot done, they became close personal friends. They vacationed together with their families. I think that kind of ruptured in part when Vince's marriage to his then-wife, Jane Scassetti, broke up, and I think it ruptured a lot of relationships. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think Vince and Ed were ever close, personally, but I think they, you know, saw each other as people who could
get things done.
Yeah, and that they could do things to their mutual advantage. In fact, I remember writing a piece about this interesting relationship in the Daily News when Ed was mayor, and he had a quote where he said something like, you know, Vince, you know, you can work with him. He always wants something for it, but you get something for your effort.
Do you see this as a cautionary tale, Craig?
Well, yeah.
His rise and fall.
Well, except that. I mean, if so, I'm not sure if the caution is being heeded because, you know, after his conviction, and as I said earlier, a large part of his criminality involved billing the taxpayers for political work. We had both Computergate and Bonusgate charges in Harrisburg, where both Democrats and Republicans in the lower house were doing precisely the same thing. So I don't know how many. This is a tough state. It takes a lot of, you know, this is a mule you got to hit with a 2x4 awfully hard before any messages get through.
I think that has finally changed in the legislature. I think they're a little more careful now about just running complete, you know, state-funded political operations. But kind of the big, you know, there, ethics isn't that hard. You know, you impose campaign finance limits. You have campaign finance reform. You demand transparency and disclosure. You fund an ethics commission with teeth and good staff. And the state hasn't been willing to do that.
Right. And you separate campaigning from governing. Because at one point, Craig, he was using, I guess, his staff as perhaps you wrote or others wrote as personal servants. I mean, taking care of
Absolutely. I mean, he had he was so coddled. I mean, every aspect of his personal life was paid for by the taxpayers. I mean, he had, as David mentioned, his son-in-law, while you know, a state aide, spent years as essentially the project manager for the renovation of Fumo's 33-room Victorian mansion. He had government-paid staff that did his laundry, cleaned his house, as David said, drove his luggage around, balanced his checkbook, ran his campaign funds. I mean, if there was a function, a political or private, in his life, it was paid for by the taxpayers.
Again, he never took cash. He didn't, you know, what he did was he got people to provide him goods and services. And boy, over time, it adds up.
What about the nonprofit, Dave, that was sort of part of this whole thing?
The Citizens Alliance for Better Neighborhoods.
Alliance, yeah,
it's interesting. You know, he didn't start it. I mean, actually, Frank DiCicco, who's an associate of his, started it. And I will say, I mean, I think it did some good things. I mean, like, you know, when the police department back in the 90s, they were struggling and they needed bikes for bike patrols and radio equipment. And it's hard to get that stuff. And so they could go to Citizens Alliance and boom, Vince gave the order and they got it. And it was good stuff. But there was a price. And Vince and his former chief of staff, Ruth Arneo, who ran the organization, helped themselves to all kinds of goodies. And it wasn't little things. I think if it were little things, you know, there is prosecutorial discretion. People wouldn't go after him for little things. It added up.
And she got convicted, too.
She was convicted, too. I mean, he used the nonprofit's money for political polling. He used it for, a secret loss, a case. He funded a lawsuit against a political opponent and managed to disguise his hand in the lawsuit as well, but secretly paid the lawyers. He actually used the nonprofit to assist in a campaign about dune reconstruction near his house at the Jersey Shore. And then the saddest thing all in the way is that at the end of all the money and that PICO steered into that nonprofit, a huge proportion of it went into legal fees.
Wow.
They ended up, you know, spending millions to basically try to stave off this indictment and protect Arneo and the rest of the staff.
Yeah, I mean, Vince's audacity is remarkable. I mean, to try and, you know, file a suit over the his view of the ocean at the shore and to tail his girlfriend. But the other thing to mention, Marty, I think here about the Vince story is just these close relationships that just were soured and people destroyed. Ruth Arneo was imprisoned. And her husband, Mitchell Rubin, who was chairman of the Turnpike Commission, was an old Vince friend. He ended up having to plead guilty to obstruction of justice in the case. And there are others.
The tentacles. Let me see what Bob from Drexel Hill has to say. Bob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I was just wondering why is it that we tend to attract the incompetent, honest politicians and the dishonest, competent politicians, and how we can change that?
Well, that's an interesting way that you put it, Bob. Do you see it that way, Craig? Incompetent, honest, and competent, dishonest politicians?
That's a great line. I'm not sure I buy it, though. I mean, I think there are a lot of effective and very honest lawmakers out there. I don't know. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, what do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I don't know that the mix here is any that different from anywhere else. But I do think that when you set rules that encourage integrity, you get a cut better of applicant. And the city has done a lot in this area. I mean, there are laws. There's an ethics board that's aggressive and active, and I think it's helped. Mm-hmm. And if the state were to do that, I think that would help.
I would just add that I think the pay-for-play federal investigation in which we mentioned led to the conviction of Corey Kemp and others had a lot more far-reaching effects, systemic effects in terms of the creation of an ethics board, greater exposure of lobbyists, and so on. John Barrow would have a better perspective. I think Harrisburg is just a tougher, more recalcitrant animal to change.
Well, and as he has said many times on Radio Times and over there, you know, it's not here where we're all living. We're almost out of time here, Craig, but do you see this, I guess, Vince Fumo as the sort of end of an era?
I do. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's interesting. He took over from Buddy Cianfrani, and his Senate seat was Cianfrani's seat, and Cianfrani was convicted by the feds of hiring ghost employees, and now he's repeated the pattern. Yeah, I don't think we're going to see anytime soon as potent and as powerful a politician as Vince Fumo.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Craig McCoy, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
He's investigative reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, has won a number of awards, including the 2010 I.F. Stone Medal for Journalistic Independence. Dave Davies, as always, thank you very much as well.
Good to be here.
Senior reporter for WHYY, frequent host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and you can follow his blog off mic at newsworks.org. We began our conversation talking with a political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, John Bates. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.